This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestine resumes a bid for a full membership status at the United Nations amid a U.S. threat to veto any such move. Britain is gripped by a wave of protests and strikes ahead of a huge energy cost increase. And Pakistan is asking for international aid to deal with the aftermath of a tragic flooding that has swept much of the country. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gizumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Palestine renews its bid for a full membership at the United Nations despite U.S. threats to block the move. The Palestinian ambassador to the U.N. says that he has started consulting all Security Council members. Riyad Mansour says the issue should move forward given that there is no peace initiative on the table. He added the success of the Palestinian bid would send a signal to Israeli leaders that they can never destroy a two-state solution. Any application for full UN membership needs approval from the 15-member Security Council. The U.S., which holds veto power, is opposed to Palestinian attempts, and now it has reportedly warned that it would veto any such move. In 2012, the General Assembly granted Palestine a non-member status that allows Palestine to participate in the UN and sign treaties, but without the full rights of other members. Political analyst Barry Grossman explains why the United States seeks to block Palestine's full membership at the UN.
The U.S. has made it very clear for a very long time that they would oppose such a move. They certainly opposed Palestine's getting the status of an observer state, and in the past have made it very clear they'll oppose any attempt to become a full member, and has they've repeatedly said that Palestinians must not have resort to international organizations and institutions in order to reach a resolution of the Israeli problem. The problem, of course, is that the occupation doesn't want peace. The occupation wants a one-state solution that sees all of Palestine free from Palestinians. They want to, in essence, carry out this long-running ethnic cleansing in order to usurp the entire breadth of traditional Palestinian lands for themselves. And by any measure, that's a violation of both international law and, of course, generally accepted morality, no matter what.
Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip attended the Friday sermon and prayer in front of the Red Cross office to show their solidarity with Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. This as last Monday, Palestinian prisoners started protesting the inhumane detention condition. Our correspondent, Eshef Shannon, reports.
Hundreds of people attended the Friday prayer in front of the Red Cross office in the Gaza Strip in a move to express their sympathy and unity with Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails and detention centers. They came to drum up support for Palestinian prisoners who kicked off a series of protests last Monday against persistent mistreatment inside regime jails. The event is part of the Friday of Rage in solidarity with Palestinian detainees. During the Friday sermon, Hamas movement warned the Israeli regime against harming Palestinian prisoners. Our military wings, including the Qassam and Quds brigades, and the military wings of all Palestinian resistance factions, are all united behind the prisoners. We will spare no effort to secure the release of the prisoners. Harming Palestinian prisoners is an attack on all Palestinian resistance factions.
Over the past 4 days, Palestinian detainees held in 24 Israeli prisons have refused to take part in security checks and returned their meals. They also organized sit-ins in prison yards as part of their protest action.
The Israeli prison service reneged on understandings that were previously reached with prisoners' representatives. It imposed punitive measures, including moving tens of detainees to solitary confinement, preventing inmates from going to the prison yard, and banning prisoners from meeting their families. In response to this, the Palestinian prisoners have declared the state of general mobilization last Monday.
In recent weeks, the Israeli prison service increased its oppressive measures against Palestinian prisoners by imposing double isolation on some detainees. Observers say the Palestinian prisoners have become propaganda material for candidates in Israel's elections.
Palestinian prisoners are escalating their actions because they demand better detention conditions. The suffering of Palestinian prisoners increases every time the Israeli regime plans to hold elections. Israeli officials are using the oppression of prisoners as part of their election campaigns.
Currently, there are some 5,000 Palestinian detainees in Israeli prisons, and that figure includes women and children.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, the Israeli regime has detained more than 1 million Palestinians since the Nakba in 1948, under the watchful eye of the international community. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Iran has lambasted the Israeli regime for refusing to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and bring its nuclear activities under international supervision.
Indeed, Mr. President, the Israeli regime is the only one in the Middle East that has not acceded to the NPT and refuses to place its nuclear facilities under the comprehensive safeguard regime of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Moreover, this regime impedes all serious international efforts to establish a zone free of nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East.
The Iranian envoy was speaking at a UN conference on nuclear disarmament as Shah Jahromi lashed out at nuclear weapon states for failing to fulfill their obligations to eliminate their atomic arms. He also criticized them for failing to give security assurances that they will not use nukes against non-nuclear weapon states. Earlier, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian slammed delegates to the UN conference for refusing to urge Israel to join the NPT. He said the delegates have undermined the achievements of the previous conferences. Amir Abdollahian was speaking with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on the phone. Welcome to another edition of the News Review. Protesters have gathered outside the office of the British Energy Regulator in London, and that came after the regulator confirmed the cost of electricity and gas will rise by 80% as of October the 1st.
The people breathe profit! The people breathe profit! The people breathe profit! People united will never be defeated!
The energy price cap rise, which has risen to over £300 to £500, is intolerable for working people, for people in poverty, for people out of work in Britain right now. I'm here because our parliamentary political parties have failed us, continue to fail us. Whether Labour or Conservative, they offer no solution to the people already in poverty and in worse situations, and to the people who will be put into poverty come October when this price cap rise comes into effect.
The protest was organized by Don't Pay UK. That is a campaign calling on people to stop paying their bills at the renewed prices. The regulator has partly blamed the increase on the Russia-Ukraine war, and that has led to a curb in Russian energy supplies to Europe. Leaders of the parliaments in Wales and Scotland, as well as the British opposition parties, have called for an immediate freeze on the price increases. Britons are also grappling with soaring food prices. That, coupled with the rising energy prices, sent inflation to above 10% in July, a rate unseen in over 40 years. Meanwhile, the UK's deepening cost of living crisis has set off a wave of industrial action sweeping across the country in recent months. This time, more than 100,000 Royal Mail postal workers have walked off the job in a dispute over pay. The move has been described as the biggest strike action of the summer so far. Said Puraza reports.
If you're a British citizen waiting for a package to be delivered by Royal Mail, expect a delay. More than 100,000 of the company's workers, hailed as heroes for working through the pandemic, have walked out of the job to fight for a wage rise amid a deepening cost of living crisis.
To come into this action, to get your members motivated.
We didn't create this crisis. The oligarchs in every society, the people that are taking dividends and profits, feeding their own fat tummies and making our people wait for a decent pay rise, that's what's causing inflation. But it's also what's causing bitterness between the classes. Now, we've got to make sure that we rebalance that equation.
The bosses at Royal Mail, a 500-year-old multinational, now privatized postal service, claims the Communication Workers Union, which represents these strikers, has rejected a pay rise offer worth up to more than 5% after 3 months of talks. The union's leader says that's simply not true.
The reason why it's a lie is because it doesn't exist. It's a total fabrication, and it's been spun to the media, embarrassingly, really, to try and make the company look as though they're being reasonable when what they're actually doing is just disgraceful. So the real situation is that the company made £758 million profit. The company gave away over £400 million to major shareholders and then imposed a 2% pay increase to the workforce.
The walkout is being described as the biggest industrial action of the summer so far, which has already seen workers strike across the railways, ports and the courts. They all come at a time when the UK is grappling with its highest inflation rate and soaring energy prices in decades.
Today's strike action is the opening salvo in a dispute that could reshape a British institution. And the strikers tell us that they're in it for the long haul. Saeed Purizam, London.
Scotland is also hit by industrial action. Workers have been refusing to work. They've been on strike for 9 days now over pay dispute with local authorities. The strike began in the capital, Edinburgh, and now it is spreading to more than a dozen cities across Scotland. The action is set to continue until Tuesday, despite talks ongoing between the authorities and union leaders. The workers want higher salaries in line with the rising inflation, and this action has already left its impact with garbage from unattended bins overflowing on the streets. It has caused criticism against the government as well. Opposition politicians are accusing it of apathy in the dispute and shifting blame to local city councils. To discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent Robert Carter, who's joining us from London. Also, we have with us Mick Napier, political activist from Belfast. Let's begin with Robert. Many families are naturally panicking over how they are going to pay their energy bills, and there's also the rising food prices. Some are even describing it as having to make a choice between freezing and starving. How grim is the situation on the ground?
It's getting pretty grim, to be honest with you, and it's affecting people of all walks of life, except, it seems, major business owners and millionaires, essentially, who can weather these types of storms. But things continue to get hard for working ordinary people, the middle class and the lower classes here. But the problem is that you also have a situation now where there is major industrial action taking place, trade unions are springing into action. But what's happening is they're now being demonized as the bad guy in this situation by the ruling government and also elements within the media as well, essentially claims that they are holding the country to blackmail during a difficult time, and that, you know, surely it's not the right time to be calling for this type of action because it only makes things worse. The protesters outside Ofgem, the energy regulator, for example, spearheaded, led by a grassroots movement called Don't Pay UK, which is, of course, advocating for people not to pay their energy bills after the 1st of October, and to basically stage a type of strike on their own. They are again being demonized as if they are at fault here. But at the end of the day, these are reactions to something else that's already happened, which is, of course, intolerable living conditions and high prices and very low wages. So the situation is spiraling. We'll have to see how far it spirals. But what we essentially have now is a zombie government headed by Boris Johnson. He's refusing to take any serious decisions in order to kind of alleviate some of this pressure, to kind of do anything about it. He's leaving that to his successor, but the competition for the next leader is still ongoing and won't be settled until I think sometime in perhaps the second week of September, early September. And of course, then we'll have to still wait and see what action they're going to take. And in the meantime, we just have to sit back and hope for the best. But the situation looks very bleak, so people's hopes are not very high.
Exactly. Let's bring Mr. McNabb here. Now, Britons have had too much on their plate in recent years. We just heard from our correspondent, and also from the Brexit to the pandemic to back-to-back government scandals, and now the war in Ukraine. Which one do you blame the most for the current situation?
You know, it's a perfect storm for this government. The strikes which are taking place, your correspondent says, of course, there's the usual attempt to demonize the strikers, but he knows very well that it's failing, that strike leaders, such as the railway leaders who appear on television, are widely seen to be eloquent, articulate, and the good guys. And the attempts by the Tory government, Labour remains silent most of the time, to smear them, don't seem to be succeeding. Look, I remember the poll tax riots and strikes, and it was a moment for Margaret Thatcher which sealed her doom. The pressure had been building up for years beforehand, but the poll tax was a step too far, and we had people smashing up McDonald's in London squares, but there was widespread support, or at least a refusal to condemn them, because the poll tax was absolutely hated. Now we see a situation where there's terrible fear among ordinary people. The price of heating homes in Britain in the coming winter will be three times what it cost last year.
Please wrap this up in less than a minute and tell us if you see a way out of this crisis.
There's no way out of it unless people manage to defeat this government. What's special about the present period is that the possibility of a political alternative has been removed by the defeat of Jeremy Corbyn, led by a coalition several years ago. Nobody expects very much from the Labour Party now.
Thank you very much. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
If you agree with me that travel is most rewarding when it surprises, then Iran might just be the most rewarding destination on Earth. By having lush, dense forests in the north, warm, sunny beaches in the south by the Persian Gulf, snowy mountains in the west, and amazingly hot deserts in the east, Iran is one of the few countries that gives the joy of experiencing four different seasons at the same time to travelers. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. With an area of 1.6 million square kilometers, Iran is the 18th largest country in the world and the second largest in the Middle East. Its area roughly equals the area of France, Spain, and Germany together. Iran's diverse and striking landscapes offer a wealth of breathtaking and spectacular views to discover. This week on Aperture's Iran Trotter series, Jawad Gharayi will go to Bahu Kalat in the south of Iran, where the turquoise waters meet the hot sand of the desert. Here's the first part.
The living world is filled with unparalleled beauties. Beauties represented by Mother Nature across this beautiful planet. A planet that's been the only habitat for humans since they came into being millions of years ago. The beauties of nature have forever captivated humans everywhere. Many of what humans have created over millennia were inspired by their natural environment. To many humans, the word nature conjures up images of mountains and forests, but nature has thousands of other beautiful facets, and some of those facets manifest themselves in sharp contrast to each other. One of the most beautiful faces of Mother Nature is the barren areas of land, or deserts. Thank you. Many nature explorers believe that deserts and steppes are the most beautiful parts of nature, and the most beautiful parts of these parts are the sand dunes and hills. But is there anywhere in the world with expanses of shifting dry sand dunes right next to a great body of salt water named the sea? Hi, I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm taking you on a journey to the most pristine areas of this beautiful land. Chile is a beautiful country with unique natural exquisiteness. A country that remarkably has vast steppes and shifting sand dunes along the coast of the Pacific Ocean, offering a natural scene of unparalleled beauty. Of course, I haven't traveled to Chile's beautiful Pacific coast. My destination is the Bahu Kalat rural district in the south of Iran's Sistan and Baluchistan province. But I'm not going straight to Bahu Kalat. I begin my trip near the border between Hormozgan and Sistan and Baluchistan provinces. There are few places in the world where sand dunes meet the sea, creating a spectacular landscape. Such coastal deserts can only be seen in parts of Chile, in the Great African Sahara, and in the Southwest African country of Namibia. Some may find it hard to believe, but in addition to those few places in the world, there is an area in southern Iran where expansive sand fields meet the Sea of Oman. A place near the village of Darak in Zaravan County. The border between Sistan and Baluchistan and Hormozgan provinces, in the southernmost area of Baluchistan on the coast of the Sea of Oman. In the past, this area of Iran was called Mukran, a name researchers say was derived from the word muk, meaning the palm tree. Given its large number of palm groves, Baluchistan can be referred to as the land of palm groves in Iran, an area with a beautiful history and peerless natural splendor. Unfortunately, the general public in Iran doesn't know much about Baluchistan. The sea, the sand dunes, and the Martian mountains, all in one place, provide an environment with no parallel in Iran and, I dare say, in the world. But the sand dunes, the Martian mountains, and the Sea of Oman aren't the only things that make this area of Baluchistan unique. It's the multitudes of palm and other trees scattered along this area, as well as the many herds of camels, goats, and sheep grazing among these dunes and mountains that make for breathtaking beauty.
Here, Mother Nature has made all her efforts to create some of the most beautiful coastal sceneries in the world, and she's done a great job. This is the result of millions of years of work for Mother Nature. So it's incumbent upon us and the authorities to keep these unmatched beauties just as they are, by not allowing any structures, however small, to be built here or in the surrounding area. Not even a few gazebos for tourists and explorers to use. We have to preserve this natural magnificence as it is. A geopark is a unified area that advances the protection and use of geological heritage in a sustainable way and promotes the economic well-being of the people who live in it. Geoparks are protected areas. Many countries dream of having one in its smallest and simplest shape and form. There are only a few geoparks around the world that are both geomorphologically rich and boast unique wildlife, history, culture, and indigenous populations. Countries with such wealth are few and far between. But this area of Balochistan is home to several morphological splendors. It's also inhabited by Baluch tribes of a rich culture, their traditional lifestyle and time-honored customs, a pure, unspoiled natural environment, the preserved remains from the remote past, the golden sandy coastlines and the deep turquoise blue waters of the Sea of Oman. The traditional fishing apparatus on boats moored at a beautiful port, and finally, very good vegetation and animal life. As I walk on beautiful sand hills, I think to myself, how are we responsible to the generations that will come into being in this country, to the natural beauties in our country? I'm spending today relishing the stunning untapped natural beauties in Zaravan and snap several beautiful pictures. The nagging question is, do we have the right to deny the children of tomorrow the opportunity to feast their eyes on such spectacular scenery? I wish no structure, no roads, nothing would be built among these ancient mountains, sand dunes, and palm groves. No hotels, no themed amusement parks to be built for human recreation on its untouched coastline. Even a few simple gazebos in the area can accelerate the destruction of this region's ecology and natural landscape. I wish all of us humans had more appreciation for the natural world, this manifestation of God Almighty's beauty, and paid it due respect. I wish all nature-loving tourists would choose to walk into the heart of nature, and by doing so prevented any harm to it. A lot of people in the world think that if they really want to enjoy their expedition into nature, they have to spend the night in multi-star hotels near their destinations. But that's not the right mentality. It's not in anyone's interests. Hotels that are built close to natural habitats do nothing but damage an intricate ecology that's taken millennia to be formed. There's an alternative way for explorers to both enjoy their trips into the heart of nature and for the natural world to be spared damage by humans. In other words, for humans to forge a partnership with the natural world. Local homes, campfires, and black tents, and also camping tents are the best options.
All the people and officials in this area of Balochistan say they hope that in the near future, the area they live in will be registered as an important and valuable geopark by the relevant authorities living in the capital city. And by doing so, they hope the unique natural environment here and the culture and customs of the old Baluch tribes inhabiting this region will be preserved and protected. I take great pleasure walking about in this beautiful natural landscape and accompanying camel herders, but this is the end of this leg of my journey. I have to set off for my main destination, the Bahu Kalat district in the north of Balochistan. The main purpose of this trip is to visit an idyllic little village by the name of Shir Gawaz, a lush, vast, green patch of land 30 kilometers to the border with Pakistan. The name Shir Gawaz was derived from the names of two wild animals, namely the lion and the boar. The locals here tell me this area is home to wild boars, but no one has ever sighted any trace of lions here or anywhere in Iran, unless in the very distant past. Perhaps what ancient Shir Gawaz inhabitants meant by the word lion was in fact the wolf or hyena. That's because those two species have lived in this region for hundreds of years. But what has brought me to this area of Balochistan wasn't the lion or the boar. I've come here to see the Asian crocodile. Parlance, this rare species of crocodile is called the Gondo. They live somewhere between River Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gawaz. The river is the biggest natural stream of water in Balochistan. It is known by different names by the locals living in villages located along its 300-kilometer course, monikers such as Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gawaz. My team and I have to walk a long distance to see one of those short-nosed crocodiles. But these gorgeous, thick-skinned aquatic reptiles in Iran are said to be very shy animals, making it difficult for us to find one. What that means is you can't get too close to these amphibians and admire their beauty at close range. We have been going about gunning for a crocodile for a couple of hours now, but we haven't been able to see even one just yet. As I say, they are very shy animals. The locals tell me I'd be lucky to see one, though they also say if you wait long enough, you'll definitely be able to see at least one. Guide is around 3 meters long. The people in this area call them the Gondo. Who would have thought that you could see Gondos, the short-nosed Asian crocodiles, in a river in Iran's Sistan and Balochistan province? At their biggest, these majestic reptiles are 3.5 meters long. The primary habitats of the short-nosed Asian crocodile are in Iran, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar. The people of Shir Gawaz tell me the best place to see the Gondos is the Shir Gawaz Dam, a barrier built across the Shir Gawaz River to impound its water. The number of crocodiles living in Iran has been estimated at between 300 and 400. The good news is the people of Sistan and Balochistan do not do anything to endanger the survival of these adorable reptiles. The bond between them is unshakable. In general, the Baluch are kind, nature-loving human beings, traits that are rooted in these noble people's culture and creed. The love of nature and of animals is part of the life and culture of the Baluch people. Animals are part of the family, among them wild animals. Probably if this were another city or country, many people would try and, man, this guy is strong. I bet if I let him go, he's definitely gonna break my bones or break my camera into pieces. As I was saying, if this mountain goat were anywhere other than here, without a doubt some heartless poacher would have gunned it down by now. But the people here love animals dearly. The gondos that we saw earlier, they're conserving them so well. Also this wild goat, that's very close to the hearts of the people here. You can see many peacocks, partridges and pheasants in the households here in Shir Gwaz, and also in other villages elsewhere in Balochistan. The Shir Gwaz River flows past Bahu Kalat village, providing the hard-working community here with water for their farms, fruit groves, and animals. Perhaps there are many people in Iran who are unaware that the fruits grown in Balochistan can only be farmed in tropical climates. But that's exactly what's happening in this province. All of the Iranian banana produce comes from this region. Bahu Kalat is also among the important producers of watermelons in Iran. The cold season is when the watermelons grown here are harvested and distributed across the country. I've just stepped into a fruit grove in Bahu Kalat. In my opinion, this is a veritable piece of heaven. Here, you can see several different species of fruits right next to each other. Something you may not be able to see anywhere else in Iran. Fruits such as bananas, dates, mangoes, papaya, all kinds of citrus fruits. I've also been told that even coffee is farmed in some of the gardens here. It's just wonderful. I mean, you could go so far as calling this place Little India, located in southwestern Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is For a Better Life.
For a Better Life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear listeners, the audience of your very favorite program, For a Better Life, you're listening to IRB English Radio. This is Asma, your friend, and we're going to have a heart-to-heart whisper regarding the literature of Ashura. Previously on For a Better Life, we talked about different themes in the literature of Ashura. We talked about the very fact that these literary pieces usually try to depict the characteristics and traits of true followers and companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and the main topics that lays behind the Battle of Karbala. We talked about this very fact that these literary pieces are not just there for us to read them and just to cry upon them. There is more to them. We have to ponder over these words and to try to reflect some of those features in our soul and our heart. So they are there for us to give us a model of the characteristics of the truthful soul that our beloved Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam wanted us to nurture in ourselves. So aside from all those things that we said, today we are actually going to follow that very same story and get to other traits of those characters. We talked about the characteristics of true followers of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We talked about the purity of their souls, the valor and the brave manners, their complete truthfulness to the Imam of their time. And now, if we want to count more of their traits that are prominent and boldly depicted everywhere in literary heritage of Karbala, well, it could take us an eternity to count the greatness of these souls. It would take such a very huge time and effort, and of course, still we would remain a specialist at the end. Now, in this episode, I'd like to bring up the famous quote of Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha, the true hero of the tragic story of Karbala, the sister of Imam Hussein Alayhi Salam, when she forcefully is brought to the court of Ibn Ziyad with the rest of her family members, who were mostly women and little kids, and that brutal beast asked her, "What do you think of what God did to your family?" Then she bravely said, "I saw nothing but beauty. These are the people on whom martyrdom is written. They went where God wanted them to go. God will gather you and them on the day of judgment. Then you will see what God does to you." Now, hearing these words from the woman who has lost her entire family, who were the best people and creatures on the world, and the most unexpected is the most unexpected thing to hear. Her heart is filled with anguish. She's been separated from her beloved brothers and family members in the worst way possible. Her grandfather is the prophet of kindness, and his father and her father is the leader of the Muslims. She is chained with shackles while her heart is bleeding with sorrow. Yet she speaks with a strength and power and never loses faith in the most horrendous event that ever happened in this world. She makes it perfectly clear that she is the daughter of Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha. So as the mother is the daughter, such a woman with that heroic stand made the entire dynasty of Bani Umayyah turn into ashes. She firmly proclaimed in the court of Yazid, "I swear to Allah that you shall never erase our memory or kill our inspiration." So this great lady of Karbala has got a lot to inspire us with. From her characteristics and her obedience to Allah to a patience and devotion in facing the greatest sorrow of human history. The fact that she sees nothing but beauty comes out of her pure obedience to Allah. What she saw was a perfect masterpiece of love, because she already knew that the story of Karbala will never cease to exist and, of course, shall turn into a model for the Muslims, and Allah will forever keep their name alive. Just as we believe those who are martyred for their faith are not dead, they shall live in the court of Allah forever. To just say the gist of what we were going through up until now, I would say that this woman is making a model for all the women throughout history. You know, sometimes we as ordinary human beings come across some devastating and horrendous issues that are just like the dramas that happen in our life. And we suddenly burst. We explode and we feel like the entire world has been collapsing around us. There are too much of the account of these sort of women in the Islamic heritage. Just as I mentioned before, the mother of Lady Zainab, Lady Fatima, is also another example of greatness, of a great woman that would inspire us with too much of ideas to just cope with whenever we are having a dilemma or a problem in our life. So as you can see, these are not just imaginary stories. Just as I told you, we'll come across some difficult situations where we feel like everything is finished and okay, I cannot tolerate. This is beyond my patience and beyond my capacity. But this woman is actually showing us that if you have a trust in Allah, if you try to nurture your soul in a way that make patience as a part and as an essence of your existence, then maybe you see everything in a more beautiful way. You see beauty even in the heart of the darkness, even in the heart of the most horrendous and horrible scenes that might come into your eyes. And yes, this is the whole thing that I wanted to say about Lady Zainab, salamullah alayha. She is our model as women, and she is teaching us as human beings that if you practice patience and if you practice obedience to Allah in every step of your life, then you shall see beauty even in the most awful situations of your life. So I guess that's the lesson that comes out of the story of Karbala, and in literature, and so much of novels and stories that talk from the mouth of Lady Zainab, salamullah alayha, we could get these themes and these lessons very clearly. And some writers put it very much beautifully in a way that you feel like it's an easy thing, though it is a drudgery. That's all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. This was Arab English Radio. Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.